On behalf of the Illinois Power Agency, I'd like to welcome everyone to today's Bidder Information webcast. My name is Benjamin Chi. I am with NERA Economic Consulting, the Procurement Administrator with the Illinois Power Agency, or the IPA. Presenting with me today is Dr. Chantal Lacasse, also with NERA. Today's webcast is about the procurement of block energy and capacity resources, also known as the Block Energy and Capacity RFP, or BEC RFP for short. We have previously used the term STP, or Standard Products RFP, and have transitioned to the more descriptive name, given the number of procurement events ongoing this year. So as such, I'll start with a couple of housekeeping items. First is that if you are a renewables developer intending to participate in the initial forward procurements for RECs from utility solar or wind resources, or intending to participate in the DGRFP for RECs from distributed generation resources, this webcast is not it. This is not the webcast for these products. Similarly, if you own a nuclear facility intending to participate in the RFP for zero emission credits, this is not it either. This webcast is specifically for the procurement of block energy and capacity products. So at this time, if this is not relevant to you, you may drop off, but certainly welcome to stay. The second thing is we are procuring supply of block energy and capacity products for three utilities specifically, especially for the energy products, and they are listed at the bottom of this slide. We will use some of the short names throughout the presentation, so take note that we will use AIC for the Ameren Illinois Company, ComEd for the Commonwealth Edison Company, and MEC for the Mid-American Energy Company. And next, one more housekeeping item here. You may ask your questions at any time during this webcast. We have scheduled time for questions at the end of this presentation, and these instructions that you see here will be repeated again then. But to ask a question, you can ask that again at any time. Simply locate the Q&A icon on the right side of your screen, select all panelists in the ask box, type in your question, and click send to submit your question. And one more thing is the presentation materials. This deck of slides, as well as the audio recording and any Q&As that we will have during this webcast will be posted to the procurement website. And the procurement website address is listed at the bottom of this slide for you. It is ipa-energyrfp.com. So the governing documents for this BEC RFP includes the RFP itself that was posted last Friday, July 21st, as well as the contract documents posted on Monday, July 24th. And you, the bidders, will bear the full responsibility for reviewing and understanding the written agreements and RFP documents. Any statements that we make here on this call and in this presentation that describe or refer to the RFP or contract documents are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by the documents that we reference. So again, please go to the procurement website where you can find the RFP that were dated July 21st and the contract documents dated July 24th. So for today's webcast, we will walk you through and provide you an overview of the RFP process and requirements, and we will dive a little deeper to talk about the terms of the transactions for each of the procurement events by way of describing the terms of the supplier contracts. We will then break and talk about the practical aspects of the RFP process, what the requirements are, what the deadlines are, and then we'll end off with a discussion regarding the bids and the bid forms, the bid as well as the post-bid process. So this process started in September of last year when the IPA filed its procurement plan. The procurement plan was approved by the ICC in December of last year with some modifications. The procurement plan itself includes a series of procurements to be held in 2017, and importantly, for purposes of this webcast, it includes a procurement for block energy and capacity resources to be held under this BEC RFP. We will talk about the energy and the capacity products separately, but to be clear, for the energy RFP, or rather the BEC RFP, it will include the procurement of energy products for all three utilities, AIC, ComEd, and NEC. For the capacity resources or products, we will only be soliciting offers for AIC only. So I will cover the energy products first. So for energy products, we're looking for specific blocks of energy blocks to be supplied to each of the delivery zones for the utilities. There are specific quantities of on-peak and off-peak energy for monthly periods that runs for each month from October of this year through May 31st of 2020. So this is the period that we are looking for, but the product, each product, will have three components. So it will have the delivery point, which delivery point that will correspond to which utility we are procuring for. We'll have specific segments. There will be an on-peak segment for on-peak hours and an off-peak segment for off-peak hours. It will have a timing dimension, which is for which month in this supply period we're after. So this is how we're defining an energy product. And also we know that not all months will have targets or quantities for which we are soliciting. And in particular, we are not looking for any quantities for NEC in the out years. In terms of capacity, we are looking strictly to procure ZRCs, or what we call zonal resource credits. These are zonal resource credits, or ZRCs, as defined by MISO, as long as it is eligible for submission into the FRET and eligible in the MISO planning resource auction. They are eligible for purposes of this contract. They include and they continue to include, as in prior years, ZRCs from demand response resources as well as load modifying resources. They are no different from what we have been soliciting in years prior. As long as they are ZRCs that are eligible in MISO, will be eligible for this purpose. ZRCs can be from any zones, and they can be outside of the compliance zone for Ameren Illinois. And the AIC compliance zone currently is zone 4. And just take note that while we say that these ZRCs can be from any zone within MISO, just note that there is going to be a payment adjustment if they are sourced from outside of Zone 4, the compliance zone. So we'll talk about the energy products first. So very quickly, as I have mentioned, a couple of key takeaways here. One, the RFP is for energy blocks for all three utilities, AIC, ComEd, and NEC. The product will have three dimensions. It will be for either AIC, ComEd, or NEC. It will have a segment component for on-peak and off-peak hours, and it will be for a given month. The new item that we are featuring here on this slide is that the quantity of product that we're looking for is divided into blocks, and each block is denominated as a 25 megawatt block. Quantities that are listed in the RFP documents are provisional at this time. There are targets that are listed there. Just take note that we will provide an update if necessary, final quantities or final targets, and this is expected to be announced no later than August 8 when qualified bidders are notified of their status. So we have talked about energy products. We are bringing up here on slide 9 that we are also soliciting not just products, but allowing bidders to bid on combinations as well. Combinations are really just combinations of products, which are in a more descriptive terms, simply packaging of products that are traded together on a monthly basis. So you have GenFab as a package of products. We have March and April as a possible package, July and August as a package, October, November, December as a package of the months, sometimes known as quarter four, as well as an annual combination that runs from June of a year through May of the following year. So this is how we are calling combinations for which you can bid on top of products that you may bid on. Number of blocks available in a combination that you can bid on is simply the minimum number of blocks available in a month of that combination. So to illustrate this and to fix ideas, slide 10 has some more visually pleasing ways to illustrate what I'm talking about. So first, as I have mentioned, a product will have three elements or three dimensions. It will be for AIC, COMET, or MEC, and in this case, we have provided the targets here for COMET for illustrative purposes. The blocks that we are after are denominated in 25 megawatts, and the targets here are listed for on-peak and off-peak hours separately, and will have a time dimension, which is which monthly period we are after. You can bid on each of these products individually, or you can also bid on combination. And how we translate from products to combinations is listed here on this slide 10. So as an example, we have the target of 29 blocks. This is for the on-peak segment in March of 2018, and 26 blocks that we are after, again, on an on-peak segment for the month of April 2018. So for the combination of March and April as a package for on-peak hours to the COMET load zone, we will be looking to procure 26 blocks in total. So, and the 26 is simply the blocks available, the minimum number of blocks available in the months of March as well as April of 2018 individually in the products. So that's how we have talked about the products as well as combinations for purposes of this BEC RFP. So I will talk about the online process quickly, and then I will talk some about the contracts after. So this is there's going to be a two-part process that we are after for applications. The application process is online. So those are the main takeaways that you will have on this slide. The part one process, sometimes known as the pre-qualification process, is for you to respond to qualification standards under the RFP. And the qualification standards in the part one process is going to be for both how you participate in the to sell energy products as well as capacity products. So the part one window will run from July 27 and will end at noon on the part one date, which is August 3rd. through the part one process, you will first of all have to get a online account, application website account, for which then you will provide information using the part one online form. And then there will be these inserts, which are standalone documents for which you can download, complete, print, sometimes will require you to sign, and then scan and upload back to the application website. The application website under the part one process will also require you in some cases to provide supporting documents such as your financial statements. The only item that is not an online task is for you to provide a bid participation fee if this is the first time you're participating in 2017 in an RFP by the IPA, to send that bid participation fee to the IPA. Other than that, everything else is done online. The part two process, sometimes known as the registration process, is for you to make additional certifications and provide pre-bid security. The part two window, it will run from August 9th through the part two date, which is at noon on August 16th. And principally, it's an online process. You will provide us information using the online part two form, and then you will complete some of these standalone documents known as inserts. The only thing that is different here, I will mention two here for you very quickly, is for you to provide your pre-bid letter of credit to each of the utilities directly to them separately. And the second thing is that while you provide the pre-bid letters of credit to each utility separately, the time for providing the capacity product letter of credit to Ameren Illinois is on a separate date. So it's not on August 16th where the rest of the information as well as the energy pre-bid letters of credits are required for you to submit. For the capacity product letters of credit, this is due at noon on August 21st. In terms of bid submission and evaluation, just take note at the top part of this slide that bid submission will be handled in principally with two key elements. First, it is entered through an Excel spreadsheet that we will provide to you on the part one notification date when we qualify you as a qualified bidder. The second is once you fill out that Excel spreadsheet, you will have to transfer that spreadsheet to us using an electronic file transfer interface. All those instructions as well as additional instructions for your encryption of your bid forms can all be found in our notice of qualification when we send that to you on the part one notification date. In terms of bid evaluation, we will be developing benchmarks in consultation with the procurement monitor that will then be filed and approved by the Illinois Commerce Commission. The evaluation will consider only your bids that meet or beat the benchmarks, and then after that evaluation will identify the least cost package. There will be fees that will be levied on bidders as well as suppliers. So the first fees that we are after is the bid participation fee. The requirement is $500, and this is paid by only new bidders in 2017. So if you have participated in the block energy products RFP in spring, you don't need to provide a new bid participation fee. The previously provided bid participation fee will cover you for this procurement event. And so similarly, if you have participated in any of the prior RFPs and have submitted a bid participation fee either in spring or the DG RFP or the initial forward procurement for wind and solar resources this time around and have provided that bid participation fee, you don't need to do so again. The supplier fee, which is covered at the bottom of this page, is for winning bidders only. So not for all bidders, but for any bidder that have winning bids. This is paid to the IPA, just like the bid participation fee, and this is due 7 business days after the ICC approval of the auction results. The estimates for the supplier fee at this time is $185 per on-peak block, $125 per off-peak block, and $55 per ZRC. And the final supplier fees will be announced on the Part 2 date by 6 p.m. So these are estimates that are provided for your reference, which may be updated by us on the Part 2 date. These fees collectively will cover the cost for administering these procurement events. We will provide more instructions or a complete set of the instructions for how to pay these fees if you send us an email at this email address, illinois-rfp@nira.com. I will now talk about in more detail the products that we are after by way of describing the terms of the supplier contracts. So just take note, supplier contracts that are final at this time were posted on July 24th, this past Monday. There are separate energy contracts and separate capacity contract. And for the energy contract, there are different contracts for each of AIC, ComEd, and NEC. The contracts are now, at this time, finalized. They have been subject to a comment process, which is over. And they are standard. You must accept the terms of these non-negotiable standard contracts as part of your participation prior to bid submission. And you'll be required to execute the applicable supplier contracts as is, without modifications, after the ICC approval of the results. The energy contracts are the same. They are identical to those that were used in spring of this year. And the capacity contract is substantially the same as was used in fall of 2016. And for your convenience, you can find a red line in particular of the capacity contract posted online as well, so that you can see the minor administrative update that we have made to the contract. So I will talk about the energy contracts first. So the AIC and NEC contracts for energy are almost identical. They are based on the industry standard EI Master Power Purchase and Sale Agreement, which is also appended as Exhibit C to the agreement itself. The entire agreement is a long-form agreement that includes these various exhibits, and the agreement is known as the Confirmation Agreement. The bulk of the agreement that lays out the terms that are specific to this transaction are covered in the front part of the Confirmation Agreement. And then you have these various exhibits that include the form of guarantee as Exhibit A with acceptable modifications that you can make to the form of guarantee appended as Schedule 1 to the form of guarantee. You have the various forms of the letters of credit that you can use as Exhibit B. You have Exhibit C as the EEI Master Power Agreement, as well as Exhibit D, the Collateral Annex, and Exhibit E, Paragraph 10, to the EEI Collateral Annex. So a few things to note. If you are new to this structure, the modifications to the EEI Power Purchase and Sale Agreement are all embodied in the front part of the agreement, the Confirmation Agreement itself. And we have certain elections that were made, as well as modifications to the credit terms. These are all part of the main body of the Confirmation Agreement, again, found in the front part of the agreement itself. In terms of the main features of this product, under the terms of the contract, this again is similar for AIC and MEC. This is for physical delivery. This is not a financial transaction. You must schedule your product to the MISO day ahead market. We have provided the MISO CP note here for each of AIC and MEC. You must schedule it for each delivery month. You must work with AIC or MEC as applicable to enter and approve all the day-ahead real-time financial scheduling entries within the MISO portal, and you must do so no later than 10 business days prior to the start of the delivery month. We have adapted this confirmation agreement and modified the confidentiality provisions in the EEI Master Power Purchase and Sale Agreement with some of the references to the Illinois Power, the Illinois Public Utilities Act. For the details of the transaction that includes the pricing and volume information for which you have winning bids through this RFP, they will all be captured in Table 1 of the confirmation agreement. In terms of the main credit terms, the exposure under this particular contract is based on a mark-to-market methodology, and assuming this is the only contract that you have with each of the utilities, then there is going to be an unsecured line of credit that may be granted to you, the seller, or your guarantor, if you're relying on a guarantor, that may be applicable here. They are all spelled out in the contract itself. And certainly, if you have any exposure above and beyond the unsecured credit that is granted to you or your guarantor, then you must meet that exposure or cover that exposure through a letter of credit or cash. You can find the letter of credit form, again, in the agreement itself, as well as the guarantee as an exhibit to the confirmation agreement. You can make modifications to the guarantee, which is provided as a schedule to the guarantee itself. But take note that if you are relying on a guarantor, the unsecured credit will be granted to you based on the tangible net worth and the credit rating of your guarantor only after you have submitted an acceptable guarantee to each of the utilities, AIC or MEC as applicable. There is no bilateral credit envisaged under the agreements, therefore the collateral requirement will apply only to seller but not to buyer. For the COMET contract, this again is for energy products only. This is based off of the standard EEI Master Power Purchase and Sale Agreement. The structure is a little different. For COMET, they make use of a cover sheet, and the Master Power Purchase and Sale Agreement is what governs, unless it is modified in the cover sheet of the EI Master Power and Sale Agreement. The cover sheet itself will contain all modifications to the EI Master and will also contain certain contract terms and elections, including elections to paragraph 10 of the collateral annex. The collateral annex is a separate document, and paragraph 10 to the collateral annex is a separate document. And these component documents will also include certain schedules to the collateral annex that we have incorporated into the collateral annex itself that will include as schedule 1, the post-bid letter of credit, exhibit A to schedule 1, the letter of full transfer, schedule 2 that will include the guarantee form, and schedule 3 that will provide some description of the mark-to-market calculation methodology. We have provided a sample confirmation sheet. The confirmation is a separate document that will then include all of the specific transaction details, including quantities and pricing information, once it is known through the RFP. So for the main terms of this transaction, again, this is for physical delivery that must be scheduled to the COMET residual aggregate load zone in the PJM day-ahead market. The P-Node ID is provided here for your reference. You must schedule through the PJM InSchedule platform 4 weeks in advance of the delivery month, where buyer, COMET in this case, will confirm your schedule 3 weeks in advance of the delivery month. Similar to AIC and MEC, we have included and modified the confidentiality provisions under the EI master with references to the Illinois Power, or rather the Illinois Public Utilities Act. Under the credit terms, it works similarly to how I have explained it for AIC and MEC. The one difference here I will flag for you is the mark-to-market methodology description can be found in Schedule 3 to the collateral annex. In terms of the capacity agreement, which is also sometimes known as the confirmation agreement, this again is for AIC only, for which we are soliciting capacity products, will include a description of the performance assurance requirements as attachment A, the form of guarantee, as well as a schedule that provides modifications that are acceptable to AIC for the form of guarantee in attachment B, and a separate attachment C that will include the forms of letters of credit as well as the letters of full transfer that is acceptable to AIC for use under the AIC capacity agreement. For this product, this will be for the transfer of AIC to, or ZRCs, sorry, zonal resource credits to AIC's account through the Module E Capacity Tracking Tool, or MECT. You must do so once you're awarded a contract by the later of 5 business days prior to the FRAP submission deadline in MISO, or the date when the Module E Capacity Tracking Tool becomes available for you to transfer your credits to AIC's account. We have incorporated as well references to the Illinois Public Utilities Act for the confidentiality provisions, as well as included a table A that you will subsequently find your quantity and pricing details for your ZRCs if you have approved bids by the Illinois Commerce Commission. So to tease out a little bit more about these ZRCs, the product that we are after, as I have mentioned earlier, these ZRCs can be sourced from any load resource zones, or LRZs. The compliance zone, importantly, because this will affect payment, is zone 4. So again, AIC's compliance zone is zone 4. If you are bidding in ZRCs only for zone 4, then the contract price will not be adjusted under the term of the agreement. You'll be paid based on the bid price or the average winning bid price for your bids that are winning bids that are all from zone 4. But if you are to bid in and win ZRCs sourced from outside of the compliance zone, zone 4, then the final payment made to you will only be known after the MISO Planning Resource Auction, or PRA, when the auction clearing prices are known for all zones. Payment will then be adjusted based on the relative difference between the source zone auction clearing price and the compliance zone option clearing price. So there is a chance that based on the relative difference between the source zone and the compliance zone ACP or auction clearing price from the MISO PRA, you could be owing buyer money and payment rather than expecting to get paid from buyer for your ZRCs. So I'll explain this in the next couple of slides. So this is a timeline for you so that you know what is going on. So the bid date is currently scheduled for in August, end of August, where the contract price will be set for your winning bids. So that does not change under the terms of the capacity agreement. In terms of your ZRCs, you must transfer your ZRCs to AIC's account, again, no later than when the FRAP deadline is due, or 5 business days prior to that, or when the Module E Capacity Tracking 2 becomes available, the later of those two events. And the delivery timeline for that is expected to be sometime in March when the FRAP submission deadline rolls around. The MISO PRA itself, the MISO planning resource auction, is expected at this time to take place in April. Once it has concluded, the auction clearing price for all MISO zones will be known, and through that, we will know whether there is going to be an adjustment to the planning year total. Planning year total is the payments to be made to you. The adjusted planning year total will reflect either a reduction or an increase to the payments based on your contract price. So importantly, at that point, we will know whether seller will be making payments or buyer will be making payments under the terms of the capacity agreement. And the delivery term or planning year will run from June 1st of 2018 through May 31st of 2019, and monthly settlement is expected to take place. The planning year total, as well as the adjusted planning year total, will be known by April, but payments, in particular the adjusted planning year total, will be paid out to you throughout the planning year on a prorated basis monthly. So each month you will pay, or buyer will pay you, the prorated planning year total amount. Or rather, to be more accurate, the adjusted planning year total amount. And again, this will be more or less 1/12 of the total payments under the agreement. So I will walk through here three examples for those that are planning to bid in ZRCs from outside of the compliance zone. So if you are only bidding in ZRCs from Zone 4, then these three examples will not matter to you. You're just getting paid the bid price that for your winning bids, basically. So I'll walk through three examples here if you're bidding in ZRCs from outside of the compliance zone. And the first example will deal with how the adjustment will add to the payment that is due to you. And then the next two examples, we will deal with what happens in the case where your payment as you expected through your bid price may be reduced or may become negative, in which case you will pay buyer rather than receive payment from buyer. So in this first example, this bidder, for hypothetical and illustrative purposes, bid in 25 ZRCs from Zone 3. This is what you bid in, and you bid it in at a price of $50 per megawatt day. This will occur in August of this year on the bid date. And then when April of next year rolls around, after the MISO PRA results are known, it is the auction clearing price, the hypothetical option clearing price in this example for zone 4, the compliance zone, is $30 per megawatt day, and $100 for your source zone. Zone 3 is $100 per megawatt day. The payment is a term that we will use under the agreement, will be based off of your average winning bid price at $50 times 25 ZRCs times 365 days to yield $456,000 and $250 of change. And then there will be an adjustment to the payment which reflects the relative difference, the positive difference basically between the source zone and the compliance zone ACP. Multiply that difference times 25 ZRCs that you have won times 365 days in the planning year will yield a little more than $638,000. That will be added to the payment. We call that the adjusted payment under this agreement that will yield total payment from buyer to seller. AIC will pay you this amount during the term of the agreement in an amount of $1,095,000. So this is an example where the adjustment to the payment is actually positive. Example 2, this scenario is where the compliance zone option clearing price is greater than the source zone option clearing price. So as long as the compliance zone ACP or option clearing price is greater than the source zone ACP, it will always reduce your payment, and in some cases may end up where you will have to pay buyer. So in this first example where compliance zone ACP is greater than the source zone ACP, we show a reduction of payment where buyer will still pay you, but at an adjusted, reduced payment level. So here you bid in and have won 25 ZRCs from zone 3. Your average winning bid price for all your 25 ZRCs is $90 per megawatt day. When April rolled around and you have the auction clearing price of for zone 4 to be $100 per megawatt day and zone 3 for $30 per megawatt day, the payment, first of all, and I'll talk about the adjusted payment after, the payment will be calculated first as the $90 that you bid times 25 ZRCs times 365 days to yield $821 and some change, with an adjustment to the payment that reflects the difference between the source and the compliance zone auction clearing price. In this case, reflecting negative $70, $100 for zone 4 ACP and $30 for zone 3 ACP. You take that negative $70 times 25 ZRCs times 365 days, that yields an adjustment downwards of $638,000 and some change, yielding a reduced payment, what we call an adjusted payment of $182,500. This is a case where buyer will still pay seller, but at the adjusted payment of $182,500. In example 3, again, if you're bidding in outside of zone 4, take note that in this example, it will capture a scenario where you as a seller will provide to buyer the ZRCs and have to pay buyer, not the other way around, but you have to pay buyer during the term of the agreement for the ZRCs as well. So you bid in 25 ZRCs from zone 3, you have won those 25 ZRCs on your contract at $50 per megawatt day. The MISO PRA determined that zone 4 ACP is at $100 per megawatt day, zone 3 ACP is at $30 per megawatt day. Payment under the contract is at $50 times 25 ZRCs times 365 days, yielding $456,000 and a little bit of change. And the adjustment would be downwards, reflecting the difference between the Zone 4 ACP of $100 and Zone 3 ACP of $30 times 25 ZRCs times 365 days. So the negative $70 that we have here is at the same reduction, $638,750, will reduce the payment based off of your bid price of $456,250, yielding a net payment from you to Ameren Illinois of $182,500. So with these three examples, you can review them. That will give you a clear idea how pricing will work under the terms of the agreement. So if you are viewing these slides for the first time, just do not worry. The slide itself, as well as these examples in the slides, are going to be posted online right after this webcast. In terms of the mean credit terms, it will work more or less similar to the energy contracts in the sense that there's going to be unsecured credit granted to seller or the seller's guarantor. You can find the standard forms of the letters of credit as well as the guarantee form as attachment to the confirmation agreement. And any exposure above the unsecured credit that will be granted must be met with letter of credit or cash. Exposure under this contract principally will work this way. It will be 10% of the contract value, and this will be required of you on the effective date of the contract execution. So 10% of contract value, basically, which is the contract price times the number of ZRCs times the number of days, that value will be required of you upon contract execution. And that exposure will be adjusted at that point to reflect any payments that are due to buyer when the MISO PRA has concluded and the auction clearing price is known. So those are principally how exposure is calculated under the contract. If you are only bidding in the compliance zone, zone 4, then your exposure will be reduced to zero once you have transferred the ZRCs to AIC's account, given that no adjustment to payments is envisaged under the terms of the contract. So with that, I will now turn the time to Dr. Chantal Lacasse, who will talk about the practical aspects of your participation in this RFP process. Dr. Lacasse.
Thank you, Mr. Chi. Good afternoon, everyone. There are two features of the RFP process that we've already mentioned. First of all, that it is principally an online process, and we will go over what that means exactly, and also that it's in two parts. So I'll start by fixing ideas, looking at the calendar, and talking about the window for submission of those two parts of the proposal. So the part one window, which is the period during which you can submit your materials for the part one proposal to be able to satisfy the qualification requirements for this RFP, starts tomorrow and ends a week later. And this schedule applies to all four procurement events, so all procurement events for energy products, as well as the procurement event for capacity for Ameren Illinois. Included in those requirements, as we have discussed and as we'll mention again later on in the presentation, is the payment of the bid participation fee for those bidders that have not yet participated in the procurement event for 2017. The evaluation of the proposal and the determination of whether you have complied with the requirements of the Part 1 proposal ends with the notification on August 8th, so roughly 3 business days later. And the window for the submission of the second part of the proposal then starts on and opens on the next day. Again, you have roughly a week to comply with submission of documents and information for the Part 2 proposal so that the Part 2 date, which is when the Part 2 proposal is due, is the 16th of August. Here, there's a bit of a divergence between the energy schedule and the capacity schedule. So all portion of the Part 2 proposal for all procurement events are due on August 16th, except for the pre-bid letter credit for capacity, where there are 3 additional business days to provide that document on the 21st of August. And the bids themselves are also due at a different time, namely the 21st of August for energy and 24th of August for capacity. The timing, and we'll go over that in more detail later on in the presentation, are that after the bid date, 2 days later, the procurement administrator and the procurement monitor each submit their reports to the commission. And then the commission has 2 business days after receipt of those reports to render its decision on the procurement event. Before going on to the details of the Part 1 and Part 2, on the next slide, we'll provide some highlights of the process. First, as I mentioned, there are 4 procurement events, the 3 energy procurement events for each of the 3 companies, Ameren Illinois, ComEd, and MidAmerican, as well as a 4th procurement event for the capacity products for Ameren Illinois. Now, there are 4 procurement events, as I mentioned. Most of the activities in terms of proposal submission requirements are concurrent for all of those procurement events, with the exception of the letter of credit for capacity. It's worth noting that there are 4 procurement events, 1 process, 2 bid dates, 1 for capacity, 1 for all energy products, but they're to fulfill the financial guarantees that must be submitted with the Part 2 proposal. We require the submission of 4 separate letters of credit. That is, so it's not by company, it's really by procurement event, and there's really 4 due if you're participating in all procurement events, so that it would be 1 for each of the companies for energy products and a different letter of credit if you're all also participating in the capacity procurement event for Ameren Illinois. And that's because there are references to some of the controlling documents in those letters of credit and different timing for release of the letter of credit, given there are different bid dates. So there are different credit instruments for submission of the financial guarantees with the Part 2 proposals. As I mentioned, 4 procurement events, but 2 bid dates, 1 for all the energy products on August 21st, and just a few days later on August 24th for the capacity product. On the bid date for energy products, there are also 2 bid windows. So both bid windows will open at 8:30 in the morning. All times that I'll mention during this presentation of the RFP process is our central prevailing times. So both bid windows open at 8:30 a.m. However, 1 bid window closes before the other, so the bid window for the 18-19 and 19-20 delivery period will close at 10 a.m. Central, while the bid window for the instant year 17-18 delivery period closes at 11 a.m. Correspondingly, for those 2 bid windows, there will be 2 bid forms. So we mentioned that the bid form are Excel bid forms that will be provided to you with your Part 1 notification. So for the energy products, you will really have two different bid forms, one for the 17-18 delivery period and one for the 18-19 and 19-20 delivery period. So those will be provided to you separately as two different Excel spreadsheets. So that's just the highlights, and we'll go into the details in the next few slides. We mentioned that the RFP was posted on July 21st, so a little early. If you go to the our procurement website of ipa-energyrfp.com, you will be able to access all of the materials, including the presentation and the recording of this webcast. On the left-hand navigation bar, you will see the fall block energy and capacity link. And once you click on that link, you will see a page for final materials, which will include the RFP rules. There's also subpages for draft documents and results, which you don't need to be concerned about now. And one note is that since posting the RFP documents on July 21st, we did find an extraneous paragraph reference that we will be removing, so we will be posting, I believe, three corrected pages for the RFP rules and noting that for you as well in the next announcement. So you'll find all of the information that you need there. So that's the procurement website for your source of information. There's going to be a second website, which is an application website, through which you will be providing online the information as well as the documents for fulfilling the requirements for your proposal. To have access to that online application website, you need to register for an account if you have not already done so. And to register for an account, you can click on the qualification forms link on the left-hand navigation bar, and that will bring up a second link that invites you to register here, to register for an account. So you can click on that. If you do that, it will open a web form and asking you for some basic information, the company name, full name of a contact, the phone number, as well as an alternate number and an email address. Alternatively, you can just send the information I just mentioned to us directly via email at illinois-rfp@nera.com, and we can issue the credentials, your login credentials, to have access to the application account with that information. So in the next few slides, I'll be describing two things for the two parts of the proposal. First, I'll be talking about the requirements. So what are the requirements that you have to fulfill to be successful in the Part 1 and in the Part 2 proposal? And I will also be talking about process. So how do you submit that information, those materials, and how do you hear from us as to our evaluation of your submission. So for the first part of the proposal, generally speaking, you will be providing some basic contact information in the Part 1 proposal for what we'll be calling the bidder team. So both information about the bidder and information about the individuals that we should be contacting, interacting with as we evaluate your proposal. You will be providing financial information and credit rating, either for the bidder itself or for a guarantor, if you are relying on the financial standing of a guarantor for purposes of this RFP. And for previously qualified bidders, by which we mean those that successfully completed the Part 1 proposal, either in the standard product RFP in last year or the year before, or that participated in the Block Energy Standard Products RFP this spring. For those bidders in the Part 1 proposal, you will be eligible to participate in the abbreviated Part 1 process. And what that really means is that some of the information that you have previously provided will be pre-populated, and to the extent that that information has not changed, then you will not need to provide it again. So that's a little bit about the requirements, and I'll give more detail in the slides that follow. In terms of the contents of the Part 1 proposal, it will consist of the information that you will have been provided, you will be providing through the online Part 1 form, and supporting documents that you will be able to upload to the Part 1 form, as well as the payment of the bid participation fee to the IPA. That's the $500 for bidders that have not already paid that fee in a procurement event this year. And the documents that can be uploaded to the form include what we call inserts that are separate Word forms that are available on the procurement website. And as needed, you will fill those in and sign them and scan them and upload them back to the online Part 1 form. So that's a bit of an overview. In the next few slides, I'll be talking about the requirement, and then I'll come back to the process and discuss that in a little more detail. So in terms of the contact information that we're requiring, the name of address of the bidder, as well as the contact information for the main individuals that are involved in the submission of the proposal. And that includes the officer of the bidder, who is an individual who is empowered to undertake contracts and to bind the bidder. And that individual will sign all the representations, both in the Part 1 proposal and the Part 2 proposal. Now, to the extent that there could be availability issues with the officer of the bidder, there is an option by which you can sign, the officer of the bidder can sign all representations that are required by both parts of the proposal at one time. In other words, you can submit the representation in the Part 2 proposal for early processing with your Part 1 proposal. The officer of the bidder also designates one individual, the representative of the bidder, whose contact information is provided in the online Part 1 form, and who will be the main person of contact for purposes of the RFP. Now, there could be other individuals who are involved in the submission of the proposals, and you can designate such individuals, and they're called nominees, by using insert. So the representative or the officer of the bidder can name up to three additional individuals by using the nominee insert. Concretely, what that means is that if we have to communicate with you for purposes of providing our evaluation or for any other purpose, then we will provide information to the representative of the bidder that has been named by the officer of the bidder, but also to all the nominees that you will have designated through the nominee insert. And if you see reference in the slides that follow to the bidder team, we mean the representative and all the nominees. So throughout this presentation, you'll see the insert and the insert number. As I mentioned, those are separate Word forms. So for the designation of the nominees, there's a document that's called a nominee insert. It's labeled with P1-2, meaning the second insert for the Part 1 proposal. And if you want to designate the nominees, you fill out that Word form, and then you can upload it in the space reserved for that purpose in the online Part 1 form. So I won't be talking about the numbering, but to be able to give you a little bit of a roadmap, those are consistently provided when we talk about the requirements in the slides that follow. We've talked about the bid participation fee so quickly, $500. It's only paid once for all 2017 procurement events. To the extent that you have not paid that bid participation fee already, a reminder that it's due by the Part 1 date. There are two methods of payment, by check or by e-pay. And we can provide to you a complete set of instructions. Now, a couple of notes on that. In the Part 1 proposal, you will be asked for a proof of submission of the bid participation fee, a copy of the check, or a receipt from the e-pay system. But you should know that it's only when we have confirmed with the IPA that the IPA has received payments that you have really fulfilled that requirement. So there's a bit of a distinction there. Another portion of the Part 1 proposal is to fulfill the financial requirements, which starts by naming the entity on whose financial standing you will be relying. So you can either choose to rely on your own financial standing or to rely on the financial standing of another party, typically a guarantor. For the entity on whose financial standing you'll be relying, you will be asked to provide credit rating for that entity, as well as financial information, namely annual and quarterly financial statements. Those can be uploaded directly to the Part 1 form. So all bidders, namely returning bidders and bidders that have not participated, that are not previously qualified, will be providing that financial information, the latest financial information for the entity. However, to the extent that you have previously qualified and that the name of the entity on whose financial standing you're relying or the credit ratings have not changed, then that information will be pre-populated in the form and you can simply confirm. So just to be clear, for any information that's pre-populated and that will be indicated on the right-hand side of the slide to say that you're confirming or you're updating as needed. For any information that was pre-populated, if you submit the form without updating it, you are confirming that the information remains accurate and up to date. So up to now, and including those financial requirements, all of these requirements of the Part 1 proposal are applicable to all the procurement events for the block energy and the capacity RFP. In the slide that follows and in the next slide will be the requirements that are specific to a given procurement event. So in the next section of the Part 1 form, there's going to be a section for Ameren Illinois, ComEd, and then MidAmerican with respect to their energy products. If you want to bid, to be qualified to bid on their energy products and combination. So you will first be asked to submit information to prepare the supplier contract documents. So there is an insert in which you can provide all of the information that the companies would use to prepare the contract should you have bids that are identified as winning bids by the procurement administrator to the commission. So there's one insert for each of the companies, and I say you're asked to provide that because if you cannot provide it at this time, then you will be asked to acknowledge that should you have bids that are identified as winning bids to the commission and you're notified of that fact, then by noon the next day, you will be required to provide those inserts. So if you do have that information available, it does save time to provide them with the Part 1 proposal. There's also representations that are made by the officer of the bidders. The bidder, again, there's an insert for each of the companies for the particular certification for that procurement event. And finally, something that's worth noting, especially if you have participated in the past, there is an opportunity to provide comments on the pre-bid letter of credit in these procurement events. So for each of the four procurement events, that is the case. So you can provide such comments with the Part 1 proposal, and you would provide those comments by submitting a red line worth documents of the pre-bid letter of credit. So the pre-bid letter of credits are available on the procurement website, so you can provide any comments from your financial institution on the particular language for each of these letters of credit. We mentioned that the officer of the bidder can also provide the certification required by the Part 2 proposal at this time for early processing. And there are also additional requirements that we won't talk about in much detail, but the extent that you fall under specific special circumstances, there are a couple of additional sections in the Part 1 form that will walk you through the requirement that you need to fulfill. So, for example, if you're submitting a proposal under an agency agreement. So generally speaking, for the fourth procurement event, so there's going to be another section in the Part 1 form so that you can provide information and documents for the requirements for that procurement event, but at a high level, it's the same type of information that's required, namely the information to prepare the capacity agreement, the representation of the officer of the bidder with respect to that procurement event, and finally, optionally, the submission of comments on the pre-bid letter of credit. So as I mentioned, the inserts for preparation of the contract, there are because the contract will be prepared by the company, as shown on the next slide, for bidders with bids that are identified as winning bids to the commission, and you're asked to provide all necessary information for preparation of the contract with the Part 1 proposal. And if you don't do that, then you'll be required to acknowledge that it will be due by noon the next day should you have bids that are identified to the commission as winning bids. That's the overview of the requirements. The requirements are fully specified in the RFP rules in Article 4. Let me move on to the process. So as I mentioned, you'll be putting information in the online form, for example, the name of the representative and the contact information of the representative. You'll be also uploading documents such as the financial information for the entity on whose financial standing you are relying. And after you have provided all such information, then you can click the Submit button. To the extent that you had information that was pre-populated by clicking submit, you are confirming that that information remains up to date and is accurate. Once you click submit, then you will be temporarily locked out of your account, meaning you will not be able to access the online Part 1 form anymore while we are evaluating your Part 1 proposal. If you provide your materials, so if you click the submit button before noon, again, central prevailing time, then we will be evaluating your material and sending you a notice of evaluation on the same day. If you provide your materials after noon, then we'll provide it before noon on the next business day. So that evaluation or that notice to you regarding your Part 1 proposal will either say that the Part 1 proposal is complete, so we have all information that is required and there are no inconsistencies or further clarifications that are needed, or we will note certain deficiencies, so information that is incomplete or for which we require clarification. You will generally have until the Part 1 date or one business day, whichever is later, to respond to a first request for additional information. If the Part 1 proposal is still incomplete or still requires clarification after you have provided additional information under that deadline, you will be provided with more time, but never more than one business day. So the further deadline may be shorter than the initial deadline for the first request for additional information. Any such notice coming to you with the evaluation of your proposal will be provided to the entire bidder team, so the representatives and the nominees. And providing information to you for the entire bidder team also applies to documents that will be delivered to you, for example, with the Part 1 notification, that will be delivered to you through a secure electronic file transfer. So just a reminder of the Part 1 date, so it's August 3rd, so that's the deadline for submission of Part 1 proposal, and the deadline for submission is actually noon on that day. And the Part 1 notification then will be returned to you 6 p.m. on August 8th. The Part 1 notification will include certain documents that are necessary for your submission of the Part 2 proposals and the bids. So the bid forms, as well as instructions for completing, encrypting, and submitting those bid forms. You will also be provided with credentials, a username, password, and a security code for bid submission. There will be a training session, and was indicated on the calendar, but I didn't note it when we started talking about the schedule in this portion of the webcast, but there is a training session so that you can practice all aspects of the bid submission procedure before the bid date, and so that if there are any technical issues on your end, those can be ironed out and not be a hurdle to you on the bid date. We also provide the final targets with the Part 1 notification. All those materials will be provided to you by secure electronic file transfer and will be addressed to the entire bidder team of the representative and the nominees. In the Part 2 proposal, or to be more accurate, in the Part 2 form, you will be required to acknowledge receipt of the confidential information, and if any of it has been compromised, we will reissue it. So moving on to the Part 2 proposal, it's really two different packages, namely the bids on the one hand and the rest of the Part 2 proposal on the other. So talking about the rest of the Part 2 proposal, you will be invited to update any of the contact information that you provide in the Part 1 proposal to the extent that it has changed. You will also be required to make certain certifications, and again, there's going to be a different certification insert for each of the procurement events. So for each company for the energy procurement event and for Ameren capacity procurement event as well. In addition to updating the contact information, making those certification, you're also submitting financial guarantees for your bid with the Part 2 proposal, and we'll talk about the exact amount in a second. And the financial guarantees are provided exclusively through the submission of a pre-bid letter of credit for each company and each procurement event for which you are bidding. So let me pause and answer a couple of questions that I've seen come in on the letter of credit. So the letter of credit is the exclusive way in which you provide financial guarantee for a given procurement event, so cash is not an option under the terms of this RFP. And the pre-bid letter of credit includes, as paragraph 14, the credit ratings that the bank has to meet in order to be qualified to issue the pre-bid letter of credit. And it's the same credit ratings that are required for the bank under the terms of the letter of credit for the contract. So the requirements for the bank for the credit ratings for the bank are the same on a pre-bid basis for the pre-bid letter of credit as they are for the letter of credit that's appended to the various agreements for capacity and for the energy products. So again, that's for paragraph 14, and roughly speaking, it's a rating of A for Standard & Poor's, or A rated by Fitch, or A2 by Moody's, and the bank has to be rated by at least two of the rating agencies. So the submission of that executed pre-bid letter of credit is required for each procurement event and is sent directly to the companies. As I mentioned, the timing is basically concurrent for all energy procurement events and the capacity procurement events for submission of the Part 2 form and supporting documents, except for the letters of credit, where the energy pre-bid letter of credit is also due on the same day of August 16th, which is the Part 2 date. But there is a bit more time for submission of the pre-bid letter of credit for the capacity procurement event. So that pre-bid letter of credit must be either in the standard form that has already been posted to the procurement website, or incorporate only those modifications that are acceptable to each of the companies and have been posted to the procurement website. The Part 1 proposal is your opportunity to propose additional modifications to the extent that they have not been proposed yet and been found acceptable, in working with your financial institution to identify those potential modification that could be required by your financial institution. And if your modification is submitted in the Part 1 proposal and it is deemed acceptable by the company, then it will become part of the modifications that are acceptable and posted. So if you have a modification that's accepted for you, it also becomes available to all other bidders on an optional basis. The expiry dates of the letters of credit are part of their terms, so they're a bit different for the energy and capacity procurement event given the different bid dates. And bidders that do not want the letters of credit to simply expire as part of their term can provide special instructions for the letter of the pre-bid for the return of the pre-bid letter of credit. The amount of the pre-bid letter of credit, let's do the easy one first. It's the capacity pre-bid letter of credit is just a flat amount that doesn't depend on the amount of ZRCs that a bidder plans to bid. Note that it had been 300,000 last year. This year, with a single delivery year, it's now 200,000. And again, for the capacity procurement event, as for the energy procurement event, only a letter of credit is allowed as financial guarantee with the Part 2 proposal. For energy, the pre-bid letter of credit does depend on the amount that a bidder intends to bid. So a bidder should provide a pre-bid letter of credit for 5,000 per block of the number of blocks that it intends to bid for that particular procurement event. There's also a minimum to the letter of credit of $250,000 for Ameren Illinois or ComEd, and a minimum of $25,000 for MidAmerican. And of note that that amount is important in the sense that it will be assessed when your bids are received whether your letter of credit is sufficient to support your bids, and if not, you could be asked to amend that bid form, or if you do not have time to do that, some of your bids could be eliminated prior to evaluation so that your letter of credit is sufficient to support your bid. And the officer of the bidder will specifically agree to that procedure as explained in the RFP rules. As part of the Part 1 notification, you will be provided with instructions for bid submission. The bid forms that you will be provided are the exclusive method for submission of their bids. These have to be completely and consistently filled out to be evaluated. We'll have a little bit more information on that later on in the presentation, but roughly speaking, for energy bids, for the bid form, you will have a bid form or a tab in the bid form for a given company, a given delivery period, and a given segment, by which I mean on-peak or off-peak. And you will be providing those bid forms by electronic file transfer, and we will be confirming receipt of the bid form to you by phone. So you will be asked to provide contact information of the individual that we should speak to confirm receipt, and should there be any inconsistencies or any information missing in the bid form, then we will provide that evaluation at that time for you to be able to cure any deficiencies that may exist. There's also going to be a backup method, which is submission by email, and you will be able to practice both the submission by secure electronic file transfer and the backup submission by email on the training day. The next slide is a reminder that there are overlapping but different bid windows for the energy products. So for the 18-19 and 19-20 delivery periods, the bid windows between 8:30 a.m. and 10 a.m., while for the instant year 17-18, then the bid window is between 8:30 and 11 a.m. So again, it's important that the amount of the pre-bid letter credit reflect all the blocks on which you may want to submit a bid on bid day, and to the extent that it does not, as I mentioned, you will be asked to modify your bid form, and if there's no opportunity to do so, then the procurement administrator will modify the bid form so that the pre-bid letter credit is sufficient to support your bids. So that could happen, for example, if it's at the end of the second bid window, then the amendment to your bid forms could simply be on the 17-18 portion of the bid forms, given that the window for the other two delivery periods will have closed by then. For the capacity products, as we mentioned, the bid date is a little later on August 24th, and the bid window for that capacity product is between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. Central Prevailing Time. The post-bid process consists first of the notification by us to you of whether you have bids that are identified as winning bids. Again, if you didn't prepare the contract insert and you didn't submit it with your Part 1 proposal, then you will be required to provide that contract insert by 12 p.m. Or noon on the day after you have been notified. Note that we strive to notify you by 6 p.m. on the bid date, whether you have bids that are identified as winning bids. And I say strive, and I mean that. However, it's possible that evaluation do take time, and therefore the notification could be later if circumstances warrant. And certainly if we can make those notifications earlier, we will do so. Each of the procurement administrator and procurement monitor submits a confidential report to the Illinois Commerce Commission that provides the results of the procurement event, and those reports are due on the second business day after the bid date, and then the commission has 2 business days to consider those reports and the recommendation of each of the procurement administrator and procurement monitor. Should the ICC accept the results of the procurement events, then the company and the winning bidders will proceed to the execution of the contracts, as shown on the next slide, and therefore the company will send electronically to the bidder partially executed contract documents. Now, there's a difference a little bit among the companies here, in that ComEd, for its energy procurement event, prepares the guarantee for any winning bidders that rely on the financial standing of a guarantor, while for Ameren Illinois and MidAmerican, the bidder is responsible for preparation of the guarantee. After receipt of those documents, the bidder can countersign and send back the contract documents electronically and do whatever is necessary to fulfill the creditworthiness requirements under the contract. The payment of the supplier fee to the IPA is then due within 7 business days of the commission decision. Of note that the pre-bid letter of credit may be drawn if the supplier fees are not paid by the deadline. So that completes the overview of the proposal submission process. Now I'll talk a little bit more about the energy bids and then the capacity bids, including a couple of screenshots of the bid form. So for the energy procurement event, a bid is simply a price in dollars per megawatt hour for a block of a product or a block of a combination. A bidder can bid on any number of products. As we discussed, there are limits given the sufficiency of the letter of credit, but in principle, can bid on any number of products, could bid on all products if the letter of credit is sufficient, can also bid on any number of combinations, including bidding on both a product and a combination that includes that product. That's the example that's provided here, where the bidder submits a bid for February 2018 on peak for ComEd, and also submits a bid for the January and February combination. So that's allowed, and we will talk a little bit later on this next slide of the maximum willingness to supply and how that interplays with the possibility that a bidder may bid on a product and on the combination that includes that product. So the maximum willingness to supply, and there's an appendix that's devoted to providing some examples of the maximum willingness to supply, one of the appendices into the RFP rules. The maximum willingness to supply is the maximum number of blocks that the bidder wants to win for a particular segment and month and company, of course. So where the particular segment, just as a reminder, is just on peak or off peak. So in the bid form, you have an opportunity to provide a maximum supply, but you don't need to, in that there is a default maximum willingness to supply that will be filled into the bid form for you. And that default maximum willingness supply will be the minimum of the target for that segment and that month, or the number of blocks that have been bid for that segment and month across all products and all combinations that include that segment and month, whichever is smaller. So the minimum of those two is the default maximum willingness to supply. So for example, if there is a target of 10 for, let's say, February, and that you have 4 bids on February, some could be on bidding on that single month for that particular segment, some could be bidding on the combination January and February, some could be in the combination for an annual product. If what you bid is 4 blocks in total for a target of 10, then it will be assumed that your maximum willingness to supply is 4, because that's the number of blocks that you bid. Let's take the opposite kind of example. If the target is 10, but you bid 14, so you bid single blocks and you've bid for February, let's say it's on peak, also as part of combinations, then your maximum willingness to supply by default is assumed to be 10. It's assumed to be 10 because although you've been on 14 blocks, there's only 10 blocks of February available that could be filled by single products, they could be filled by combinations, but ultimately there are only 10 blocks for that particular month of February in that particular segment of on peak. So the default maximum willingness to supply then is 10. So where you could want to put in and submit a maximum willingness to supply that's different from the default is if you wanted to specify a maximum willingness supply that's lower than the default. So let's take that example again where you have a target of 10, Febrion peak, you bid 14 through bidding on products and through bidding on combinations. It could be that you bid on 7 individual blocks for Febrion peak, that you bid on 7 combinations that include that Febrion peak block. And you could specify a maximum willingness to supply of 7, meaning you could want to bid to win the bids on your single product, on your combination, but not on necessarily on all of them. So you could specify that maximum willingness to supply. It would be smaller than the target of 10. So the energy bid forms, as we mentioned, have several tabs. The first tab is a tab where bidders provide information, namely the company name is going to be pre-populated, but you will be providing a contact name and phone number. Again, the importance of that information is that when we contact you, to confirm receipt of the bid form first, and second, to provide the evaluation of that bid form, you will be using the contact information that you will have provided on the bid form. Not shown here is also a certification that has to be made on that initial tab to acknowledge that the bids that you're about to submit are binding on, as explained more fully under the terms of the RFP rules. Each of the additional tabs for the energy bid forms is for a particular company, a particular delivery period, and a particular segment. There are also, as a reminder, that there are really two bid forms that correspond to the two bid windows, one bid form with the 18-19 and 19-20 delivery years, and the other one for the 17-18. So on each of those tabs, you will have the month, the component month of that delivery year, and you will also have the combinations. Those will all be specific columns on the tabs for that particular company, delivery period, and segments. And you can put your bid entry by simply inputting the price in dollars per megawatt hour for those blocks. Once we have received all the bid forms and the bid windows are closed, then we can proceed to the evaluation. Evaluation for energy bids has two steps. The first is to remove all the bids that fail to meet or beat the benchmark. And the second step is to select the package, considering both bids on individual months and bids on combination, to select the package that yields the lowest average cost per megawatt hour. All right, and the last section of the presentation, we'll go quickly talk about the capacity bids and the bid forms. So just a reminder that bidders can bid on CRCs from any zone, which means that to fully specify a bid, you will be specifying the quantity of ZRCs on which you are bidding, the price. That could be a price for each one of these ZRCs. You can specify for a given quantity, let's say 25, what the price is for those ZRCs, as well as the source zone for the ZRCs. You can bid on any number of ZRCs up to and including the target for the delivery year of this procurement event. So this is just to illustrate what I just said, that there are really kind of three components: a price, dollars per megawatt day, a number of ZRCs to which that price applies, and a source zone for those ZRCs. The bid form generally is on the same model as the energy bid form, in the sense that, as shown on the next slide, the first tab is to provide the information, your contact information, and again, that will be the information that we will use to contact you during the bid windows to confirm submission of your bid form and to provide any evaluation. On the next tab, then all the ZRC bid entries can be provided there with the three components of the bid, the price, the quantity, as well as the source zone. And we believe that the number of rows should be sufficient, but should that not be the case, you can submit more than one bid forms to have a sufficient number of rows for submission of all your bids. Again, the evaluation is in two steps. Bids that fail to meet or beat the benchmarks are eliminated in the first step, and then from the bids that remain are selected the lowest price bids up to the target. That concludes the presentation portion of this webcast.